Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on separation of church and state right after this. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this show are just a small part of our two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one is don't say anything, then keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Now, your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. So don't give the prosecutor the victory. Make him work for it. Now listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation, or in some cases, police intimidation. The first judge in U.S. versus Dickerson put it this way. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" That comes from U.S. versus Dickerson. Now, a second judge put it this way. He said, "You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." And that comes from Belknap versus United States. And the third judge said this. He said, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as protect the innocent and the farsighted." And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, and informative. And it's free. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of separation of church and state. My position is this. Very simple. Thomas Jefferson did not intend to separate the church from the state. He intended to separate the state from the church, which is exactly what has not happened. The state has infiltrated the church and has taken it over and controls it. How do you like that? Well, at least 324,000 of them. Now, there is, in this country, 6,000 unincorporated churches who do have rights, and particularly rights to free speech, and can go out and speak on subjects that are taboo or prohibited to the other 324,000. For instance, I'll give you an illustration. You're a pastor and a preacher, and you want to go out and you want to criticize the government. You want to say that Barack Obama and his national health care bill violates the Bible and that Christians should not participate in that program. God help you! if you do that publicly, son. You'll have the IRS on you. It isn't just your 501c3 tax-exempt status that you're gonna lose here, son. They'll come in there and take your church away from you and can your ass. And they might even lock you up in jail before it's all said and done, depending upon how you behave yourself. Now, there's a guy here that actually tested that, and his name is Pete Peters. God love him. He's out in Colorado someplace. I kind of forget where he's at now. I drove out there one time. I think it's in Loveland, Colorado. Or somewhere kind of like that. And he was opposed to the homosexual behavior, and he was citing the Bible. And he was on point. He wasn't lying to anybody. He said, here's what the Bible says about this, and we ought not to be participating in this, and we ought not to be voting for this and that and another thing, one thing and another. You can't get involved in politics and preach at the same time. That's prohibited conduct. So the state has injected itself into the church, which is what every one of our founding fathers objected to and wanted to prohibit. And that's exactly what the ACLU is promoting. Not a one of our founding fathers wanted to prohibit God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, or the Bible from being used, spoken of, and highly at that, in our public schools, or any school for that matter, or in our Congress, or in our city council meetings. In fact, they advocated it, and they put it into our Constitution. They put them in to our state laws. Well, until 1947. And then somebody came along and they started citing Jefferson's Wall of Separation letter, off point and out of context. And as a result of that, they have succeeded. I don't deny it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's right or that it's good. I'm just reporting to you that's the way it is. And so, now, there's an outcome that comes to this, and our founding fathers and many of our politicians and public leaders, you know, in between, believed in this thing called future rewards and punishments. I'm sure that our president and our Congress today and our most of our governors and legislators don't believe that today. I wouldn't doubt it. I don't think that the average Joe Sixpack Christian believes it either. But I thought I would at least report to you what our Congress and what our state governments have had to say about it. Listen to this. The U.S. Congress on March 27, 1854, received a report from Mr. Mackham, M-E-A-C-H-A-M, Mackham, I guess that's pronounced, of the House Committee on the Judiciary. Here's what it said. It must be considered as the foundation on which the whole structure rests. Laws will not have permanence or power without the sanction of religious sentiment, without a firm belief that there is a power above us that will reward our virtues and punish our vices. Now, let me pause right there. Can you imagine Harry Reid in the Senate standing up and making that statement? Well, that'll be a cold day in hell. Our president? Any members of the Congress? Save for Ron Paul. Now, I wouldn't put it past Ron Paul to stand up there and say, well, let me tell you where this is coming down, boys and girls. There's probably four or five representatives. Hell, there might even be a senator or two in there that's got something between his legs beside hair. But there's not many of them. Not many. It goes on to say, in this age, there can be no substitute for Christianity. That in its general principles is the great conservative element on which we must rely for the purity and the permanence of free institutions. That was the religion of the founders of the Republic, and they expected it to remain the religion of their descendants. There is a great and very prevalent error on this subject in the opinion of those who organized this government did not legislate on religion. Well, things have changed since 1854, but at least up until 1854, our Congress still believed that Christianity was the foundation of our secular institutions. At least that's what they said. State of Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, in the case of the Commonwealth versus Wolfe, said this in 1817, "Laws cannot be administered in any civilized government unless the people are taught to revere the sanctity of an oath and look to a future state of rewards and punishments for the deeds of this life." State of Maryland. The Constitution of the State of Maryland, adopted in 1851, declared that no other test or qualification for admission to any office of trust or profit shall be required than the official oath and a declaration of belief in the Christian religion. And if the party shall profess to be a Jew, the declaration shall be of his belief in a future state of rewards and punishments. Rewards and punishments. The Constitution of the State of Maryland, adopted in 1864, required all state officers to make a declaration of belief in the Christian religion or of the existence of God and in a future state of rewards and punishments. State of South Carolina. The Constitution of the State of South Carolina, adopted in 1778, stated Article 12, "The qualifications of electors shall be that every person who acknowledges the being of a God and believes in the future state of rewards and punishments is eligible to vote." Boys and girls, you couldn't vote unless you had a belief in the Christian religion and in a state of future rewards and punishments. And that doesn't sound like separation of church and state to me. Does it to you? Article 38, South Carolina. "That all persons and religious societies who acknowledge that there is one God and a future state of rewards and punishments, and that God is publicly to be worshipped, shall be freely tolerated." The Constitution of the State of South Carolina, adopted in 1790, said Article 38, "That all persons and religious societies who acknowledge that there is one God and a future state of rewards and punishments, and that God is publicly to be worshipped, shall be freely tolerated." The State of Tennessee. The Constitution of the State of Tennessee, adopted in 1796, stated Article 8, Section 2, "No person who denies the being of God or a future state of rewards and punishments shall hold any office in the civil department of the state." Article 11, Section 4, "That no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under this state." The Constitution of the State of Tennessee, adopted in 1870, stated Article 9, Section 2, "No person who denies the being of God or a future state of rewards and punishments shall hold any office in the civil department of this state." State of Mississippi. The Constitution of the State of Mississippi, adopted in 1817, stated, "No person who denies the being of God or a future state of rewards and punishments shall hold any office in the civil department of this state." Hey, boys and girls, remember what I told you here yesterday or day before? Our founding fathers believed in God, believed in a future reward or punishment, believed in the Christian religion. Hell, Christians don't believe in the Christian religion today, much less your state or public officials, but our founding fathers did. And they did up to about, I'd say about 1950. In this country, I can't speak for the rest of the world or the rest of the Anglo-Saxons, but here in the United States, until about 1950. Yeah, we were pretty hot and heavy after practicing the Ten Commandments of God. We didn't exclude God from our public schools when I was a child. During my tenure in school, we did. But, you know, not in my early childhood. Now, we did not have prayers. I don't ever remember prayer in public school when I went to school. But we didn't have any problem with the Bible, the Ten Commandments, or God. We didn't have any problem with teachers. And get this, you know, you could have a Mormon teacher come in there. If that Mormon teacher in there, you know, was teaching, or a Protestant or a Catholic or somebody else, you know, as long as he was talking about God and morality and thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not kill, and you know, when I was a little kid, you know, you went out there and started to fight with some kid, you know, they'd bring you in and they'd say, now listen, Jesus doesn't approve of that. And this thing, this boy over here, that's your neighbor. Then here's the way you have to treat your neighbor. You treat your neighbor as yourself. I mean, somebody give you a lesson in morality here. You know, if you got fighting out there on the school grounds or something like that. All right, going on here. State of Mississippi. I got that one. Here's a guy named Gustave de Beaumont, the French historian Gustave de Beaumont, traveled in America with Alexis de Tocqueville in May 1831 to February 1832. He was commissioned by the French government to study the American prisons, the American government, and religion. And he published his report in Paris under the title, and I can't pronounce it and won't try, in 1835. Here's what he wrote. Sometimes the American constitutions offer religious bodies some indirect assistance. Thus, Maryland law declares that to be admitted to public office, it is necessary to be a Christian. The Pennsylvania Constitution requires that one believe in the existence of God and in a future life of punishment or rewards. Benjamin Franklin. Ben Franklin listed topics and doctrines which he considered of vital importance to be shared and preached. That there is one God, Father of the universe, that he is infinitely good, powerful, and wise, that he is omnipresent, that he ought to be worshipped by adoration, prayer, and thanksgiving, both in public and private, that he loves such of his creatures as love and do good to others, and will reward them either in this world or hereafter, that men's minds do not die with their bodies, but are made more happy or miserable after this life according to their actions. That was Ben Franklin. Sir William Blackstone. Blackstone's commentary fame. He was an English jurist who deeply influenced the growth of the common law, jurisprudence, and the basis of law in America. In 1758, he was honored by being elected Oxford's first Vinerian lecturer, and in 1770, he became one of the judges of the Common Pleas. From 1765 to 1770, Sir William Blackstone published his highly influential work entitled Commentaries on the Laws of England. These were so universally accepted in America that by 1775, they had sold more copies in America than in England. This work set the foundation for America's great legal minds, including Chief Justice John Marshall. When scholars examined nearly 15,000 items written by the Founding Fathers from 1760 to 1805, including books, newspapers, articles, monographs, pamphlets, it was found that Sir William Blackstone was quoted more than any other author except one. One. Blackstone stated the belief of a future state of rewards and punishments, the entertaining just ideas of the main attributes of the Supreme Being, and a firm persuasion that he superintends and will finally compensate every action in human life, all which are revealed in the doctrines of our Savior, Christ. These are the grand foundations of all judicial oaths, which call God to witness the truth of those facts, which perhaps may be only known to him and the party attesting. All moral evidences, therefore, all confidence in human veracity, must be weakened by apostasy and overthrown by total infidelity. Wherefore, all affronts to Christianity or endeavors to depreciate its efficacy in those who have once professed it are highly deserving of censure. Sir William Blackstone. Now, notice here that each and every one of these guys that I'm citing over here in these state constitutions, state statutes, and etc. You know, witness after witness after witness here. These guys are doing this right in their parliaments, for crying out loud. You can't vote unless. You can't hold public office unless. Hey, boys and girls, our founding fathers did not understand the separation of church and state. Now, it may well be that we should separate the church and the state. It may well be that all churches should have 501c3 tax exemption. It may well be that the state should regulate and control what you preachers say out there in public, which we now today call separation of church and state. That's what we have. And maybe that's good. But by God, you didn't get that from the founding fathers. You got that from yourselves. You dreamed that up since 1947. You didn't get it from any of these guys that signed our Declaration of Independence or our Constitution or served as President of the United States. Now, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. I cannot definitively say from Jefferson's letter, since it can be taken two ways. But you know, a little later on, I'm going to give you some of Jefferson's comments on God and the Bible and the Ten Commandments. You know, Jefferson had some things to say too. And his statements are totally inconsistent with any concept that the ACLU has, or anybody else, any of these evolutionists, or any of these anti-God, you know, New Agers out here, who are advocating this lunacy called separation of church and state. It's totally inconsistent with Jefferson's other statements that he would espouse that we should keep God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, or the Bible, commonly referred to as religion, out of our governmental affairs. Hell, we even have this written on our Supreme Court building in stone, for crying out loud. Now, somebody's going to say, well, now we've got all these Muslims and Shintoists and others over here. Well, that's fine. You know, you Muslims are entitled to your views, and, you know, you're just not entitled to bring your religion over here and stick it up our hind ends. And none of our founding fathers ever thought for a minute that you Chinese or you Muslims or anybody else had a right to come over here and enforce upon us your religion. And as a matter of fact, that's precisely what our First Amendment is designed to protect us from. We were here first. This is ours. Now, it is true we threw it away, like the prodigal son. We, the white Anglo-Saxons, threw away our inheritance, threw away our heritage, threw away our God, threw away our prayer, Ten Commandments, and the Bible. That's true. We did all of that. And now, in its place, we have 33% of the people in this country who do not believe in the Bible, God, the Ten Commandments. They may believe in prayer, but not to this God. Not to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And as a matter of fact, the Christians of the country who call themselves Christians today, they don't pray to this God either, nor do they obey him and keep his commandments. None of them do. None. Zero. Zilch. I'm suggesting that maybe we might want to reconsider this. You know, there's, if in fact there's going to be some rewards and punishments here, maybe you and I ought to reconsider our position here. Maybe we ought to change a little bit. Giving this God the finger might not have been one of our better decisions in life. Just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, we got some more guys over here. Listen to this. A guy by the name of James McHenry. He said in 1813, James McHenry became the president of the First Bible Society in Baltimore, Maryland. He conveys the urgency of distributing Bibles to the public in an article to solicit funds for the society. Neither in considering this subject, let it be overlooked that public utility pleads most forcefully for the general distribution of the Holy Scriptures. The doctrine they preach, the obligations they impose, the punishment they threaten, the rewards they promise, the stamp and an image of divinity they bear, which produces a conviction of their truths, can alone secure to society order and peace, and to our courts of justice and constitutions of government, purity, stability, and usefulness. In vain, without the Bible, we increase penal laws and draw entrenchments around our institutions. Bibles are strong entrenchments. Where they abound, men cannot pursue wicked courses and at the same time enjoy quiet conscience. Now, today, we have eliminated the Bible, and we have ensconced ourselves with some 2.5 million laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices. Hell, even our tax code over here has about 15 or 16 volumes to it. 15? I haven't counted them recently over there, but I got a whole shelf of just Title 26. Hey, boys and girls, God runs the entire universe on 759 laws. Listen to that. The creator of the universe runs the whole universe on 759 laws. And what have we got here? Just here at the federal level, we got 2.5 million. Come on. And we think that just by, you know, our Congress is sitting here just grinding and cranking out new laws, new rules. We got a new law over here the other day. They're telling us we got to have health insurance now. Hell, I don't need any health insurance. I'm not signing up for the program. If the bill itself was 2,400 pages. 2,400 pages. Can you believe that? I'd have a hard time reading something like that, 2,400 pages of new law. That's just a tip of the iceberg. You wait until those guys really get cranking on that thing. Well, they'll have the U.S. Code under health and welfare. That'll be Title 42. Hell, they'll have to have another 10 or 15 volumes just to regulate and just to run the health care system. There's 19 health laws in the Bible. 19 health laws in the Bible. You guys have 2,400 pages just at the federal level alone. All right, now, if that's what you want, that's fine. But, hey, listen, there's a better way of doing business. We could govern ourselves internally with these laws and principles of the Scripture contained in the Ten Commandments. And it was John Adams that made this observation about our Constitution. He said, "The Constitution of the United States is written for a moral people. And once we surrender or give up our morality, we can no longer live free." If you can't govern yourself, then somebody has to govern you. You know, if you can't take care of your own health, I guess somebody else has to do that. And your government comes in and says, well, for 2,400 pages and I don't know how much more new tax, we can take care of your health. I don't need any of the above. I can practice those 19 health laws all by myself, and I don't need those 2,400 pages, and I can have a higher measure of freedom from the health care police than the rest of you can. And I would like to suggest that you consider that. Hey, we're at the halfway point. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book that's written by a guy named William J. Federer. His name is spelled F-E-D-E-R-E-R, and it's called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. It's a legal brief is what it is. It's a book of evidence which was put together for the express purpose of going into the U.S. Supreme Court, filled with a lot of court cases, mainly citations that come from our founding fathers in our federal government. Also supported by state constitutions, federal constitution, laws, statutes, rules, correspondence between the founding fathers and other founding fathers, and so on, which supports the position that I took when I opened the series and I said, separation of church and state is just so much falderal from the ACLU. The basic source of this kind of legal falderal, I'll call it, is from the Illuminati, founded by Adam Weishaupt in 1776, which has three basic tenets. the separation of church and state, the spread of democracy, and the emancipation of women. They have succeeded in all three. The emancipation of women has resulted in the destruction of the family. In America, before the emancipation of women, we had eight divorces per 100,000 marriages, about 1900. Today, it's 67%. I don't think they ever intended to reach 100%. I think they just intended to destroy the family, because the family is the basic building block of society. The objective is to destroy the American society, and they have succeeded. The second was the spread of democracy. None of our founding fathers had a good word for democracy. Democracy lasts just so long until the people learn that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. Then they bankrupt themselves, and that's where we are, and that is a total success to the secret societies. The third is the separation of church and state. They began in 1947. By 1962, they had succeeded. Today, we have an official public policy of separation of church and state. We have kicked God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and Bible out of our public institutions, and particularly our public schools. So you can say the Illuminati and the secret societies, with their three basic planks, have totally succeeded. 100%. I'm just making a report that the deed has already been done. Nobody's told you that they've succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. Now that it's been accomplished, there's a result that's coming from that. Now, the objective here of the secret societies is to create a new world order in which they're going to create their new Age of Aquarius. It's an occultic religious institution. And they're going to use their religious occultic institution to replace our religious, God-centered, and God-oriented institution, which came from Moses. They have succeeded. They've done that. All right, now our God comes along and says, well, all right, boys and girls, now I told you not to eat off that tree. Remember? Okay, now here's the results that are going to come down for that. Now, all of our states, all of our colonies, all of our founding fathers, and that includes, I'm going to include Thomas Jefferson in this. Thomas Jefferson did not separate church and state. He was advocating the separation of the state from the church, which has not been accomplished. Again, the Illuminists have succeeded. They have interposed the state into religion. They control it. Religion in America is totally controlled, just like the news media and the press is totally controlled by the state. End of the report. So the rest of us might as well wake up and smell the coffee here. That's the way the game is coming out. That's the way the game's being played. Now, we're talking about future rewards and punishments. It's the last chapter here in the book. Now, remember, the book now is called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law, William J. Federer. I'll give you a phone number here to call. But you could also go to bravenewbookstore.com, Barnes & Noble, or to a Christian bookstore. You probably would find it in a Christian bookstore, would be my guess. Their phone number here is 1-888-USA. WORD, USA Word. It's their telephone number. It's toll free, 1-888-USA-WORD. And they're online too. It's called www.amerisearch.net. I guess you could get WJ Federer at AOL.com. If you want to write to the author for some reason, you'd have WJ Federer at AOL.com. All right, we're back here at the end of the book over here. Samuel Adams, April 30th, 1776. He wrote to John Scully of Boston. He said, "Revelation assures us that righteousness exalts a nation. Communities are dealt with in this world by the wise and just ruler of the universe. He rewards or punishes them according to their general character. The diminution of public virtue is usually attended with that of public happiness, and the public liberty will not long survive the total extinction of morals. The Roman Empire, says the historian, must have sunk, though the Goths had not yet invaded it. Why? Because the Roman virtue was sunk. Could I be assured that America would remain virtuous, I would venture to defy the utmost efforts of enemies to subjugate her. You will allow me to remind you that the morals of that city, which has borne so great a share in the American contest, depend much upon the vigilance of the respectable body of magistrates of which you are a member." John Adams had this to say, March 6, 1799, President John Adams issued a proclamation of a national day of humiliation, fasting, and prayer. Can you imagine President Obama? President Lincoln did it. President Washington did it, and Adams did it. He said, "As no truth is more clearly taught in the volume of inspiration, nor any more fully demonstrated by the experience of all ages, than that a deep sense and a due acknowledgement of the growing providence of a supreme being and of the accountableness of men to him as the searcher of hearts and righteous distributor of rewards and punishments are conducive equally to the happiness and rectitude of individuals and to the well-being of communities." John Adams wrote to Judge F. A. Vanderkamp on January 13, 1815. He says, "My religion is founded on the love of God and my neighbor, in the hope of pardon for my offenses, upon contrition, upon the duty as well as the necessity of supporting with patience the inevitable evils of life, in the duty of doing no wrong, but all the good I can, to the creation, of which I am but an infinitesimal part. I believe, too, in a future state of rewards and punishments." John Adams wrote to Judge F. A. Vandekamp on December the 27th, 1816. He said, "As I understand the Christian religion, it was and is a revelation. Yet it once, or let it once be revealed or demonstrated that there is no future state, and my advice to every man, woman, and child would be, as our existence would be in our own power, to take opium. For I am certain there is nothing in the world worth living for but hope, and every hope will fail us if the last hope, that a future state, is extinguished." And John Adams wrote, "That you and I shall meet in a better world, I have no doubt, than we now exist on the same globe. If my reason did not convince me of this, he said, then Cicero's dream of Scipio and his essay on friendship and old age would have been sufficient for that purpose. But Jesus taught us that a future state is a social state, when he promised to prepare places in his Father's house of many mansions for his disciples." And Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson wrote, "The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend to the happiness of man. There is only one God, and he is all perfect. There is a future state of rewards and punishment. To love God with all the heart and your neighbor as yourself is the sum of all. These are the great points on which to reform the religion of the Jews." Now, I mentioned to you a little earlier here before the break that the statements of Jefferson, such as this one right here, if we were to contend that Jefferson wrote to the Baptists in Connecticut with the statement, the wall of separation of church and state, with the intention of conveying to their minds that he thought that the church should be taken out of the state and out of its institutions, out of its schools, out of its parliaments, then it's inconsistent with his other statements that he made writing in his correspondence to others of the founding fathers. And remember, it was this same guy, Jefferson, who was the author of the religious free exercise section of the state of Virginia. Excuse me. Have you noticed that the religious free exercise is aimed at the state to stay out of the business of the church? Which is precisely what we have not done. Yeah, that's where it's at, all right. You know, once we came up with this Internal Revenue Service, once we came up with this concept of income tax to finance our government, then we rewrote our tax laws and we put the church under the authority of the state under this 501c3 tax exemption. That's where it's at for all you preachers out there. That's why you're under the thumb, you're under the authority of the state government. And you're absolutely not free to go out and teach anything that you want to out of the Bible. I defy any of you Christian preachers to go out there and preach and teach as it relates to your government, your taxes, the income tax, or sodomy. Go do it and see what happens to you. I dare you. How do you like that? I dare you, you pulpit parrots. Now, just exactly what our founding fathers wanted to protect us from is what we are all now subject to. It is an all-powerful state that is dictating to the church. You don't have any fear today of the church influencing any state governments. You don't have any fear of your local preacher down there influencing some little kid in the first grade over here, teaching him about the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal or thou shalt not lie. You don't worry about that at all. But by the same token, you can have these lobbyists coming in here and paying bribes, buying the votes of your congressmen and your representatives, which is the death knell. Remember, the death knell of your democracy. And democracies only last until they learn that they can raid the public treasury, which you've already learned very well, America. And you've raided your public treasury until you're bankrupt 10 times over. That's where reality's at. Now, Benjamin Rush comes into the game. Benjamin Rush was born January 4th, 1745. He died April 19th, 1813. He was a physician, an educator. He was a philanthropist. He was a member of the Continental Congress, 1776 and 1777. He signed the Declaration of Independence. In 1774, he helped found and was president of the Pennsylvania Society for Promoting the Abolition of Slavery. He helped found and was vice president of the Philadelphia Bible Society. He was a principal promoter of the American Sunday School Union and a member of the Abolition Society. He also served as the Surgeon General of the Continental Army in 1777 and 78. He helped to write the Pennsylvania Constitution in 1789 and 90. He was the treasurer of the U.S. Mint, 1797 to 1813. In 1783, Dr. Benjamin Rush helped found Dickinson College and joined the staff of the Pennsylvania Hospital. In 1786, he established the first free medical clinic. In 1786, Dr. Benjamin Rush wrote Thoughts Upon the Mode of Education Proper in a Republic, in which he said, quote, I beg leave to remark that the only foundation for a useful education in a republic is to be laid on the foundation of religion. Without this, there can be no virtue. My God, can you believe? Can you believe this? Let me read it to you again. He said, I beg leave to remark that the only foundation for a useful education in a republic is to be laid on the foundation of religion. He thought that you had to, in education, the foundation of education would be based on religion. You know, boys and girls, this whole concept of, well, you know, we got to watch out because you'll get some Mormon teacher in here, you know, or you're going to get some Catholic teacher. So what? So what? You know, bottom line over here is the Mormons have the same duty to practice the Ten Commandments that the Catholics do, that I do and you do and everybody else. And as a result of that, why don't you leave the Mormons alone and let them go practice polygamy and butt out of their lives? Hey, you Mormons out there, you know it was the government that butted in. It wasn't the Baptists. It wasn't the Pope or somebody else. It was the Congress. It was your politicians. It was your government butting into your religion. That's what the problem is. It's the government butting into religion. It's not the problem of the Mormons butting into the government. It's the problem of the government butting in to the Mormon church. Now, always keep this in mind. If the government can butt in to the business of the Mormon church, by God, the government can butt in to the business of the Catholic church or the Baptist church or anybody else's church. Which is precisely what every one of these founding fathers was opposed to. I can't find any reference in here to any of these founding fathers advocating a state religion like they have in England, like they have in Italy, you know, like you have in Japan. Now, you know, you've got state religion in Saudi Arabia. All of the Muslim countries have state religion. Hell, maybe that's a good way to go. I don't know. I'm not arguing against it. It's always been my thinking, you know, that if the Afghanis want a state religion over there, well, what in the hell do we need to go over there and explain it to them for? Why do we need to go over there and butt into their business? We Americans are the biggest butt-inskis that God ever put breath into. There is no other example in the history of the world of people with bigger noses stuck up somebody else's hind end than an American butting into everybody else's business in the world. Name one. Send me an email. Name one other country. One other people. One other civilization. One other society. If we ain't number one, by God, we'd have to be a close second. Well, that was Benjamin Rush. Foundation of religion. Without this, there is no virtue. Now, he went on and made some more comments along this line over here. So let me throw this in here. He says, and without virtue, there can be no liberty, and liberty is the object and life of all republican governments. Such is my veneration for every religion that reveals the attributes of the deity or a future state of rewards and punishments. That I had rather see the opinions of Confucius or Muhammad inculcated upon our youth than to see them grow up wholly devoid of a system of religious principles. But the religion I mean to recommend in this place is that of the New Testament. It is not my purpose to hint at the arguments which establish the truth of the Christian revelation. My only business is to declare that all of its doctrines and precepts are calculated to promote the happiness of society and the safety and well-being of civil government. A Christian cannot fail of being a republican, for every precept of the gospel inculcates these degrees of humility, self-denial, brotherly kindness, which are directly opposed to the pride of monarchy. A Christian cannot fail of being useful to the Republic, for his religion teaches him that no man lives to himself. And lastly, a Christian cannot fail of being wholly inoffensive, for his religion teaches him in all things to do to others what he would wish in like circumstances they should do to him. Notice this guy, Benjamin Rush. He says, hey, it would be better if we had Confucius or Muhammad inculcated upon our youth than to see them grow up wholly devoid of a system of religious principles, which is exactly what you have in America today. Totally devoid of any religious principles. Hell, we won't allow it. It's against the law. I don't think you Canadians or Australians are very much further ahead of it. Now, the bottom line to all of this is that there's a result coming, and when the result comes, it's going to be real nasty. I mean, god-awful nasty. I didn't write it. I'm just here to report to you. Write this down. You want to see the nasties over here, get it down. It's contained here in the Scripture, and God tells you, here's what I'm going to do. You know, every once in a while we get a note. Some newspaper gets a note when a bomb goes off someplace, and they say, hey, we're taking credit for that bomb. We did it. Well, here's the creator of the universe. He comes along and says, hey, boys and girls, pay attention. I got a note for you. It's in Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, those two chapters. They're the penal clause chapters to our contract. We got a contract with God. We breached the contract. Here's the penal clause. I haven't heard any preachers out there tell you what this penal clause is, so I thought, well, hell, I guess a plumber could come along and do that. Penal clause. Here's what I'm going to do to you if you violate the terms and conditions of our deal. Now you're in breach of contract. You're in violation of our deal. And here's what I'm going to do. Read those two chapters. All right, now, back here on the farm, Noah Webster said this. In the 1828 dictionary, he said, religion in its most comprehensive sense includes a belief in the being and perfection of God, in the revelation of his will to man, and in man's obligation to obey his commands, in a state of rewards and punishment, and in man's accountableness to God, and also true godliness or piety of life. With the practice of all moral duties, the practice of moral duties without belief in a divine lawgiver and without reference to his will or commands is not religion. All of the founding fathers said you have to put morality and virtue into the citizens of a free society. And if you don't have that, you can't have a free society. That's why you can't have a free society in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand today. You have to have government coming along and dictating to you and telling you what to do, when to come in, when to go out, when to get up, when to go to bed, and what to do in between. It's because you don't have any moral guide to guide yourself internally. So you have to have the policeman out here telling you what to do and how to do it. That's not freedom. And that is not what our founding fathers advocated, at least not in this country. And they didn't advocate the separation of church and state. They advocated the separation of the state from the church. All right, boys and girls, I'm out of time again, so I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, around the world, in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you want more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.